White Sox fans, it's Brett Ballantini, your very favorite fellow White Sox fan out there. And again, I'm hosting Southside Sox down on the farm. It's podcast number 10. And through just about all of them has been my partner on this podcast. It's Darren Black. He does all of our update stuff, pretty much does it all. Let's face it. Let's just round him up and say he does it all, because essentially he does it all. He just took on an extra day this week. He's like, yeah, I got nothing to do Mondays. I'm going to write the nightly Monday update now. Darren, thank you for taking a moment out of your busy minor league updating schedule to visit with us on the podcast.
Yeah, anytime on a Monday.
Perfect. All right, let's hop right into it. We've taken probably 2-3 weeks now without really diving too hard into the system. We talked about trade chips, talked about the draft last time out. Let's get back into the system a little bit, although we're going to vary by the end. We're going to get back into some nastiness with the draft. Let's start at the top. Let's talk Charlotte. Tell me this, Darren. Is there anything that Ronaldo Lopez did aside from draw a $2.1 million salary this year that earned his trip back up to Chicago, apparently to be a relief pitcher for an undisclosed period of time?
Short answer, no.
Okay.
He didn't do anything to deserve this. This is just where they are at. Where he just got done pitching on today, Monday. So he might even be back in Charlotte by the time you're listening to this. That's my guess, but I mean, there's not a ton of options in Charlotte that are decent, right now anyway. It'll have to come from outside the system for another guy that slots in there for good.
Yeah. And it doesn't maybe look good, but it is a joke. Okay. He's making the salary, but all right, he's on the 40 man. He is getting paid the money. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, all right. Throw him out there for a couple innings in one of these fake doubleheaders. All right, well, let's just move on from Ronaldo, because there's just not much to talk about when it comes to Ronaldo Lopez, who I still believe has one of the best smiles in the major leagues. I really wanted the guy to succeed, but I don't think it's going to be with a White Sox cap or maybe any of those major league baseball, any of those 30 major league baseball caps. Well, let's talk about a guy who, in almost comic sense, in almost Charlie Chaplin, like reacting a minute too late to getting sort of slapped in the face kind of comedy sense, the slapstick that is Luis Gonzalez's circumstance, he's gotten a number of chances as sort of the most able outfielder, true outfielder at Charlotte and even before that in Birmingham. He's always sort of been like 1A on the list. As a defender, as a guy with speed, as a guy who theoretically can put the bat on the ball, he pretty much has never taken advantage of the very, very small little auditions he's had with the White Sox. So it's not really fair to get too down on him, but it's as if now 2 or 3 chances, maybe too late, or maybe a chance or two too late, it's sort of like he's woke up, he's reacted in slapstick fashion to that slap, and now he has gone bananas in Charlotte. Anything you can see that's different about the guy other than maybe just he finally heard the alarm clock?
Well, the biggest difference right now, so he got called up late June, and actually he didn't get a ton of playing time, but he just looked much better out there than previous times he was up. Couple doubles, those were his only 2 hits, but he was keeping his eye on the ball really well. He's been walking a lot recently, like more than normal, and his strikeouts are still a bit high for a guy that doesn't have much power and hasn't really shown bat-to-ball skills until this past month, which is concerning. But he's been doing really well for, say, 3-4 weeks. He's got 160 WRC plus in July, which is fantastic. You can say that's BABIP related, but he's also like hitting the ball hard. Like he has 4 homers over that time span. So it's not all because of just like little dribble singles or anything. And obviously he's a great defender. He's I don't know, like maybe he's the 7th outfielder in the depth chart right now. Still, again, if Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez are not coming back tomorrow, to Chicago at least, so if he needs to come up in an emergency situation, it'll be him, because Blake Rutherford has not taken that away from Luis Gonzalez, at least not yet. But he's just coming on too late, because they decided to go with Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets, not outfielders. So he's just walking the spot.
you don't want to push your parent club to be like, okay, let me pick like a catcher or a first baseman to try in the outfield because I'm just not getting it done.
Two first basemen.
But you're right, Darren. I mean, he's made an impact in a very small addition with the club. I was surprised when I was doing this latest, haven't published it yet, latest value survey and just running down everybody's WAR. And I know very small sample size, so that's almost like Jimmy numbers. But if you combine his Fangraphs and Baseball Reference, he's a 0.2 WAR for like playing like a sneeze. And, you know, so, I mean, that's not a lot, but I mean, for the amount of impact he could have had, that's not bad. He's showing well in a way he hasn't really probably since like a spring training, like 2019 or something. So, I mean, that is a positive trend, even though it may be too late. Okay. We're talking about, you mentioned Eloy and Luis Robert. So I got to ask, even though we didn't talk about this, Eloy has like 48 errors already since he's been in left field playing in the different levels. Does this discourage the White Sox from putting him in left field when he does get called up to the White Sox, or are they just not going to have a choice but to play him some in the outfield?
Yeah, I still think he's going to be a DH when he comes up, because I think he's going to be in Chicago before Yasmani Grandal is. Maybe that's just a good way to get him out there, have him DH for however many weeks until Grandal comes back. If Grandal can't catch when he comes back, which is what I'm assuming, and then have him just kind of work on the side between games, just try to learn, I guess is the right word, how to play outfield. Yeah. But he's just when it comes down to his bat and you have to have it in the lineup somewhere, and if it has to be in the field, then it has to. But Andrew Vaughn's fine out there, so he's not really pushing anybody out of their spot. It's just his bat's really good. You just have it in there.
And you have to look at Eloy now as like, under these weird circumstances, it can't go on into say next season, but for these weird circumstances, he's like a platoon in game every game, pretty much fifth, sixth, seventh inning. You're probably taking him out of the game for a defensive replacement. So like Billy Hamilton's going to just be like his study buddy all year, or Goodwin or whoever it ends up being. Pretty much he can't be offended at that. And the White Sox are going to just maybe have to sacrifice the big hit late with him not in the game because they can't afford to have him A, kill himself, B, lose a game because of, you know, fill in the blank, whatever. It's going to be something.
Yeah. And La Russa already does do that. It's just he's taken out like Gavin Sheets and Brian Goodwin to put in Billy Hamilton, which we're totally okay with because even though Sheets has done pretty well along with Goodwin, they're not Eloy Jimenez. It'll just be weird when he's going to do that. But I mean, he should. If they have a 2-run lead, 7, 8, 9 left, you'd much rather keep the lead than roll the dice and see if Eloy gives it away in the field.
And if it was just him giving it away in the field, okay, that's bad enough. But the fact that he can give it away and take himself out for this season, which now we've seen he's capable of doing every season. All right, let's shift to AA, probably a little quicker stop here, because we're going to just talk again about Romy Gonzalez. We've talked about him several times. I think right off the bat, he made an impact in the season. He's a bit of a up and down. You're pointing out that he's had a, I guess you could say, a high luck rate with his BABIP, but I mean, he's just a guy who's still young in his career, and what he's taken on a challenge with a position change and his power, that has to be raising some eyebrows with the White Sox. And whether he's even on any kind of real radar now, he's got himself in more of a picture than he was.
Yeah, he's got an ISO over 200, which is fantastic, especially for, I guess he's kind of a middle infielder at this point, though he can kind of go wherever he needs to. I was just pointing out that because he's hitting the ball really well lately, but he's just doing that at the same time as he's not really walking. And for a guy that is going to have a 330, 340 BABIP, it's always nice to have him near 10% walk rate. I mean, it'd be great if it was more, but you've got to be realistic with some of these guys. And for the season, it's looking good, 10%. It's just been half that during this stretch, which is why it's kind of like, eh. But if you just look deeper in the stats, like his BABIP was usually around the 330s, high 320s for his professional career, and it was a bit low heading into the stretch. So he's just kind of correcting itself, you know, go math. Correcting itself in the season. So that's just, I mean, he's having a great season. He's only been in rookie ball and low A, and he's having his best offensive season in Birmingham in double A. So been great.
That's impressive. And that's the kind of stuff that's going to get you attention, not just from, it's going to get your attention on all fronts, because you, no few prospects are expected to want, as they're getting better and better food, going up the chain, yeah, to have a heavier appetite. And I mean, as you're saying, his best season so far is at his highest level. That makes mm-hmm. you go, okay, this guy, he might be legit.
Yeah. And he is, well, I should preface this with, there are new rules in regards to base running at each level. I don't really remember which one double A is. There's literally a different rule at each yeah. level. But he's 15 stolen bases out of 19 tries, which is pretty good. Doesn't have a triple yet, but he's just hitting more homers. So maybe that's just what's happening there. But yeah. he's just, for a while, it was always double A would ruin you, especially with the White Sox. And he's just, from a not really heralded prospect to mm-hmm. like an 18th round pick to actually doing really, really mm-hmm. well is really refreshing.
Yeah, to be in the picture. I mean, that when you're an 18th round pick, that's probably all you ever want. You just want to get into the picture. He's in the picture.
Yeah.
Okay. A guy who I guess maybe just coming in way back in the DSL days was always in the picture because he was a little bit of a bonus baby and so forth, but it was always played older than his level. Finally, I believe we're almost pretty much at the proper level for Yolbert Sanchez, who I believe has just been promoted to Birmingham, which who knows could result in somebody else getting pushed up to Charlotte. But he's a guy who's just been not only continuing to field well, which has been his calling card, and have maybe a little bit of speed, or at least maybe be a smart player, but he's actually hitting some. No, I don't think power, but I mean, he's putting bat on the ball. What do you project him as? Is this going to be a guy who can, is the best he can scratch being, say, a bench infielder? What we would have thought for maybe an Eduardo Escobar type of player who, you know, of course, ended up kicking that coverage, but is that what we're looking at for him, or is there more he can do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah, a bench utility middle infielder is probably what he is going to be. If he does make the majors, he's mm-hmm. just getting into double A. And though he was hitting well in with Winston-Salem, there was a noticeable drop compared to his rookie ball stats, which usually isn't a fantastic occurrence. But as I noted in the weekly update, he has this really odd circumstance of coming from Cuba, not playing a ton in Cuba, having to deal with coming from Cuba and all those stuff that goes along with immigration and all that, to then playing a bit in 2019 stateside rookie ball, and then no season, and now he's back playing in probably the best competition ever he's ever had. He's just been through a lot these past 3 years. So I don't want to, because MLB Pipeline did note that he came in a bit overweight. So I don't want to be like, oh, well, this season's a wash because of that, because he's been through a ton. But I really do want to see him actually with more age-appropriate players. Double A should be the first with that, because he'll be the same age as Rami Gonzalez. He's nowhere near the power, but bat-to-ball's got to be there. I wish he would cut down on his strikeouts a bit more. They're creeping up a little too high for a guy that's supposed to be really good with bat to ball. Projection wise, backup middle infielder, and then just kind of hope for the best after that.
And not to disagree with Romy, but I mean, it is still encouraging that maybe in what you're pointing out is it's some of his first consistent play, like close to ever. His offensive game is coming together, or it's improving. I mean, that's the trend you want to see. You don't want to see him, flush out at high A. So I guess there's some encouragement there. Maybe a guy like that who has been through what he's been through and is finally now seeing some consistent time and maybe is in maybe a little bit better shape. Maybe there is a more ceiling, you know, than we might anticipate right now.
Yeah, it's just he's got a long road ahead for a 24-year-old. So maybe we look at him coming up 26, 27. Just kind of once he finally gets used to it, but eventually he'll be a guy that you just see in the south side, like Luis Gonzalez will be up every now and then, and then he just has to prove that he deserves to be there, to stay there.
One day Danny Mendick will move on, and there's got to be a new Danny Mendick. So
first Leary Garcia has to move on.
Oh, that's true. There's never gonna
move he's in there forever.
On. He's just going to become a coach. He'll be like, hey, wait, he's coaching third now? All right, I thought he was playing. I guess maybe just in case they need to activate him. All right. Things are going to get more interesting, though you wouldn't think so, because we're getting into guys you might not necessarily know about as well. We're going to get into some of the more, maybe the more obscure levels, and we're going to get into maybe a little bit of controversy before this podcast is done. We're going to take a quick break, though. So pause just a second. We'll be right back after a commercial message.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Brett Ballantini here hosting Southside Sox on the Farm, podcast number 10 with my buddy Darren Black. Does essentially, we're going to say probably 87% of the updates, but I'm going to just round that up to 100. Does 100% of all our updating work. Tireless. Appreciate you taking time out from another busy night. For you, Darren, pulling yourself away from six different screens at once. Don't probably have to pay attention to the White Sox. They seem to be in the process of not having their best night out there, but we are now at the low A level, and my question just simply is, because Jose Rodriguez has basically been our MVP 130% of the time this year, he's hitting the heck out of the ball. He's basically doing everything except field, which is sort of major, but okay, it's a level where, all right, let him figure it out. I guess my question is, and giving you excuse to talk however you do want to talk about Jose, things that you probably said many times before, is this a guy who has a chance of being promoted this year? Is it important for him to be promoted? Is it dangerous for him to be promoted? And is he the guy to be promoted out of the Cannonballers? Because the Cannonballers are mostly disappointing.
Yeah. So if taking out guys like Luis Maeces and Harvin Mendoza, who are demoted, so if they're going back, I wouldn't really count that as a promotion. Yeah. He definitely is the one that deserves it the most. He has done well all year long. Even when he's had a slump, he just kind of like hits 260 and gets singles, which isn't fantastic. But if you're hitting 260 and getting singles and that's your slump, that's a pretty good slump. But he, obviously the defense is a problem right now, but he's also 20. So he's got a lot to learn just in general. But if it does sound like Gilbert Sanchez is getting called up, if there is any middle infielder from Kannapolis that should get called up, it should be him. You can make an argument for Brian Ramos, but he is 19. Mm-hmm. I would much rather, though 19-20 doesn't sound like a huge age difference, Jose Rodriguez, it still is like meaningful. Mm-hmm. And Rodriguez does have more games played and things like that. So I hope he gets a chance. I don't know why it would ruin him. Obviously he could go up and just kind of just be really bad, but he has to go up eventually. So if he's going to be really bad, then maybe take all those mistakes and then just kind of learn in the off season. Yeah. Like a lot of other Sox players, in higher levels, like Mike Rodolfo has kind of taken. But if anybody, even in, on the pitching side, if anybody in Kannapolis gets promoted or deserves one, it's Jose Rodriguez.
Yeah. And not to completely undercut the credibility of Darren Black, who just gave us a fantastic answer about Jose Rodriguez, but a sneak preview here, I believe as soon as tomorrow, which would publish perhaps Wednesday, I think I'm finally going to get, not Venus Victor, but I think I'm finally going to talk to Dan Victor for a podcast. And what I'm really interested in, among many different things, because Dan is writing a draft overview piece. He's written a really cool piece about building like the perfect pitcher, some really good stuff from him this week. But one thing I'm really interested to pick his brain about, because he's our guy in Kannapolis. He's like Mr. Kannapolis. I'm really interested. I mean, because we can see his video and we can hear the crack of the bat from Jose Rodriguez and you know, okay. And we have a sense. Darren can look at the stats. We get a sense of how great this guy is. He's like my favorite prospect. So I love him. And I don't know how to figure out anything, but I just like him. I'm interested in knowing and picking Dan's brain about, you know, the makeup he's sensing about Jose, what he sees him doing, you know, in warming up and prepping. Again, still a very early age. You're not going to draw any sort of conclusions. You're not going to print the book and send it out on him yet. But that said, I want to know a little bit more because this guy seems to be, you know, in theory, maybe the most exciting prospect in the system, as crazy as that might be to say. So that'll be a fun thing to look forward to if it comes through. Maybe I'll be talking to Venus tomorrow. I don't know, you know, and maybe she'll have some insights. I'm not sure.
It'll be a surprise.
Yes, it would definitely be a surprise. Been a surprise so far. Okay, sort of a parallel discussion with Kannapolis. I guess we even say Kannapolis and Arizona. And that is sort of this triumvirate of great young arms, sort of the next wave of arms, Drew Dahlquist, Matthew Thompson, Jared Kelly, a year later in drafting, but all sort of bunched together, none of them having inspiring seasons. And of course, we don't overreact to that, but you'd rather see inspiring seasons than ones that are not. What is your take on these guys? Should we be disappointed? I'm going to say concerned. We shouldn't necessarily be concerned. I can guess that. But where's your comfort level with these guys? And of any of those three, is one are you more okay with, than the other two?
So I wouldn't categorize anything as we should be worried that they might be just horrendous. None of them have done fairly well. Like Andrew Dahlquist was doing well for a time. And he's also been the one that's been most consistently pitching. But he and like a bunch of other pitchers in Kannapolis and Winston-Salem just have really bad control issues. I would like to assume that it's because they didn't really play in 2020, but I also don't want to, like, we're now in July. If there was a problem, they should have been sent down to fix that. And none of them were sent down unless they had to do a rehab assignment. Like Matthew Thompson just came back from his rehab assignment. If he does well for the next month plus, then that'd be fantastic. Then that means he figured something out. And Jared Kelly just came back. He had a couple nice outings. Or a nice outing. He just allowed one run in two innings. But none of them you should be happy about. You should be disappointed in all three of them. I would not be worried unless they were really bad coming out of the gate next season, because I'm guessing they'll all be back in Kannapolis, because if they can't do well in Kannapolis, they shouldn't go up to Winston-Salem, obviously. And they still are young enough that that doesn't really matter in terms of age progression, especially for Jared Kelly's case, coming from pitching in high school and then going to Kannapolis and pitching, which is a huge jump. But hopefully they get it right. Report said Kelly's fastball was still high 90s in his rehab assignment, which is fantastic. That's what you want. That's why I'm not worried or anything, because it's not like his like pitches fell to 93 miles an hour. Or anything like that, like an Alec Hansen kind of situation where it just kind of was a whole new pitcher. But hopefully they get it right going into next year. But I wouldn't count on it.
Okay, Darren, some real talk here. They pay me the big bucks to ask these questions. All right, so some straight talk. Especially at this level, when we're talking about low A to back to Camelback, they call them rehab assignments. And I know this isn't like hockey. It's not like you guys got a concussion. They can't, they don't have to say anything. I mean, are some of these just, hey, let's give these guys a break. They are going to be probably on innings limit anyway. Let's give them a breather. Let's let them skip a turn. We'll call it a rehab. We'll give them a little blow at a little bit lower level. Just allow themselves to get their legs under. Or am I just too cynical for my own good? Because, you know, I would be worried. Okay, well, great. Then that means two of our guys have been injured. Well, I'm not sure that that's the case either. And this isn't disparaging toward the White Sox. This is just saying, all right, sometimes it's just like, all right, let's reset you in Arizona and then get you back a little confidence.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. Probably. So Thompson's already up. I think when minicamp breaks for the draft picks, Jared Kelly will magically be done with his rehab assignment, probably.
You're like, yeah, all right.
Or maybe it'll be closely related to there or something, because that's just kind of how that goes. But it's just weird because they probably would have also rehabbed back in 2019 in Great Falls just to kind of get a feel for. Not staying in the Arizona Complex League and going on a more or less more relatable minor league kind of trek, I guess, in Montana.
Going to the one sandwich shop in Montana.
Yeah.
To dine.
There's probably a bit more to do in Camelback. But yeah, it's just, I mean, there's better facilities in the Arizona Complex League, obviously. That's where they play spring training. So that's just kind of how it goes. They're fewer teams, obviously, not as many spots to pitch. You're in a weird situation where every single pitcher should be on an innings limit, even if they are a bit older. They still probably are because they didn't pitch at all last season. I mean, we're seeing that with Michael Kopech right now. Mm-hmm. They're really only using him one inning at a time. And he's making it like only 12, 15 pitches at a time because of how good he's doing right now. But it's just wacky season. This is what it comes down to.
I'm bailing on what I said our next question is going to be because I don't really care that much yet. But let's – I like undermining my own agenda on the fly. Okay, how many of these guys – we really need a sleeper agent at Camelback. We need like a vendor. We need Sean Williams to somehow crash the thing, like work the the gift store or something. Because there's like a block of guys who we just have never heard anything else about. I mean, the guy who's in my head the other day, because he's like, was the two-way player from last year's very memorable, very short, and very excitingly named draft, Addison Coffey. Like, we've heard nothing about him. I assume he's maybe at, if he hasn't retired, I assume he's at Camelback. He's just like working out. But we don't hear anything about these guys. And of course, the White Sox or any team aren't obligated to give us like daily pat on the head, you know, pat on the back, reassuring, you know, updates about all these guys. But it'd be like, be good to know like they're alive. And they haven't, you know, some of these guys, they're like trickling in and then, you know, oh, hey, look, he got into a game in Arizona. Oh, that's right. I remember that guy's in the system. Are there guys out there or like anybody you're wondering about?
He's not really unknown, but Bryce Bush, he was hurt. And then Fangraphs might've been a mistake or something, but he randomly says on the game log that he played in the ACL on July 2nd. And I just totally missed that because he didn't record any stats or anything. And then I checked their roster and it doesn't list rehab assignment. So he was demoted to there, but he's just not playing. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on with him. Or really anybody in the Arizona Complex League, even if they are playing. Cause you really, like how I said, Jared Kelly is 90s fastball is pretty high. That's usually when you only hear about those guys, when they're the top five prospects going through the system, or once, you know, you have the draft picks, like top five round draft picks or top five signing bonus draft picks coming through there. That's when more people go bring their speed guns, kind of hang out and watch baseball. But yeah, I mean, I just looked up Addison Coffey right now and he was assigned to the ACL White Sox on June 26th.
Just hanging. He's enjoying the great spreads at Camelback, I guess.
Yeah. He hasn't
maybe checking out a little nightlife.
Been in a game. Yeah. I don't know.
They said Addison, okay, on August 10th, your season starts. And you know, there could be some of that personality because they have one team. Yeah. I know it's been a running joke that the White Sox have more than one team, but on the other hand, their Complex League team is like 4-12 or whatever. Maybe they don't need multiple teams because the one team, Darren can't win.
And it's not like, because I'm sure people in Great Falls are pretty bummed that they don't have an affiliated team anymore. And I'm not saying if they only had the Great Falls team there, but they can have two ACL teams. Like other teams do that, which
two DSL maybe the teams.
Yeah, or two DSL teams. Well, I mean, this DSL this year is kind of, there's not that great. So maybe not two DSL teams. That would be really, that second one would be pretty bad.
Unless you're grabbing a guy from Oklahoma and saying, guess what? You're going to the Dominican Republic. You have to go to the Dominican.
Sorry.
Which actually, to be fair, Dan, would actually only be fair that we take some of our domestic draftees, especially the guys who are getting
that's true,
messed around for like, I don't want to introduce that topic quite yet, but that sort of only would be fair. And actually, food for thought, White Sox, that tip was free. Free tip?
Yeah.
free tip. Of course, then you got to pay those guys room board.
And then Dominican sports media will be like, well, why did these, none of these guys speak Spanish? What's wrong with you guys? Boom. How do you do interviews?
Boom. It's so much. I can't, I'm just not going to do a Zoom with Chase Krogman. He can't speak any Spanish. I don't want to have to talk through a guy interpreting for him. Oh, my monocle has dropped. Okay, let's get to a little bit of controversy that spreads beyond the White Sox. So the White Sox are guilty here too, and we have called them out when there's reason for them to feel guilty. And let's face it, all pretty much all major league teams, I think a couple have distinguished themselves as trying to do all they can for their minor leaguers, which all they can is still very much an asterisk phrase. But just coming sort of across the wire as we're recording here tonight, we've got some stuff coming out about the A's squad sleeping like across like conference room chairs and like, I don't know, a hotel ballroom or something last night. And the fact that digging into some of their bills, which I'm sure are provided by the players, it's indicated that for longer homestands, guys this year now, I assume because of pandemic restrictions, there are no host families this season for guys, which obviously defrays housing costs for these players, in addition to helping, particularly in the case of international players, maybe assimilate a little bit differently or better. So because they have to stay in hotels for these longer homestands, their charges just for the room, I'm guessing they're not going minibar crazy, just their charges for the room, shared rooms, they're not in suites, shared rooms, and I'm sure the hotels aren't good, are outpacing, just say for like a long way. Well, these are six. So maybe this was a 12 game homestand, let's say a back-to-back homestand for these guys. So they're 12 games, half a month, their housing costs alone for the hotel are more than their monthly paycheck they're getting paid. At the same time, we're getting news of some signings. White Sox have some signings as well. And none of them are egregious, but the new game is because there's no defined slots that say you have to pay a player this level for being 10th round or 15th round. Teams are pretty much gaming the system to say, I'm going to throw all my money into 3, 4, 5 slots. The rest of the guys are just screwed. The Cubs, we saw, not to pick on the Cubs, their 10th rounder.
We can.
Well, believe me. Okay, let's pick on the Cubs, Darren. Thank you. I do not need that much encouragement. Peter, Matt, I don't know what his name was. I'm sorry. Hit the 10th rounder. Apologies to you, Matt or Peter. Got paid $5K. His bonus was $5K for a 143 round, 143,000 slot bonus recommended, whatever those numbers mean, because they don't mean anything anymore. So basically the Cubs couldn't even give this guy their 10th rounder, who I'm sure is one of those guys who's screwed. There's nowhere he can play. He's a fifth year, fourth year, whatever senior. He's got nowhere to play. Can't even give him a five-figure bonus for signing and then beginning to lose all of his money and have his family like support him and have have fundraising, have crowdfunding, allow these people to live. Mm-hmm. This is a trend that seems like it's getting worse. I'm curious, I guess I've spoken enough. Your observations of this, it's both ends of these stories is just despicable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is nothing new for baseball. Like baseball is, I mean, literally been doing things like this for a century and a half. Players literally created another league in the Federal League in the mid-1910s to actually try to make some money until baseball told the government, like, yeah, like, we're a monopoly, please help us. And they did. Yeah. And then obviously you have the reserve clause until that went away. And now the reserve clause has morphed into the 7 is more than 6 service time game, mm-hmm. which obviously is better than having a lifetime contract with somebody, but it's still 6-7 years of
very slow progress.
Very slow progress. And I shouldn't even say that. That's 6-7 years of major league service time. You still have a few years in a minor league system where you're making so much less than what MLB ball players are making. And even then, there's still like certain times they're underpaid in the majors, even if they are making $1 million or $2. Like they're still underpaid for what they are giving to the club. And we see this with college now. They're doing the NIL name, image and likeness, still probably not where it should be, mm-hmm. but now college players have a bit more, or even high school players have a bit more of a choice, but just still it's baseball. It's not football or basketball. They're not going to be like the local Mazda dealership is looking for those baseball or basketball or football guys. And this, I mean, and we'll talk about the Cubs again. They gave their sixth rounder a $1,000 bonus.
Oh my God, that's right. Let's pick on the Cubs.
I mean, the Sox do this too, because I think they just signed their 10th rounder for $10,000. And obviously $10,000 is a lot less than what they should be paid, but it's $9,000 more than the sixth round guy that the Cubs just gave, which I know there's, it's all gaming the system. They're trying to sign the better players. But still, like we went from 40 rounds to 20 rounds. We got rid of minor league baseball teams. Fans are packing the stands again, so they can't come make up that excuse. Like people are watching the games all the time. It's just, I don't know how you can fix it. Like, I'm not gonna get into the mindset of 30 billionaire owners and them wanting to keep all their money for themselves or whatever. But it's just, it's a frustrating kind of experience because you were just drafted in the sixth round, like top 200 or whatever it is, maybe top 300. And then you're like, here's $1,000. Please play for our advanced or for the Arizona Complex League for a couple of years and then we'll cut you. Like, that's kind of just what it comes down to. And like, it's fantastic that there are 20 players picked, like more than any other draft, but it's still like so many of these guys are just there because they just need arms for the three guys that teams actually care about in the draft. It's just kind of an unfortunate circumstance. And I don't understand why, you know, providing food or like a decent place of living isn't a competitive advantage. Like, you would think if you sleep 8 hours, you would, you know, be a better baseball player on a bed, not like how the St. Louis Cardinals guys were sleeping in a like chairs in a hotel lobby, which I don't know whose fault that was, but if that happened for the major league team, they wouldn't have said go sleep in the hotel chairs. They would have found a different hotel.
And this is like a tornado blew through town. We've seen several stories. I mean, they haven't been endless stories. We've seen more than one. This isn't the only story we've seen this year about this. We've seen several times where their reports are there's no hotel for the teams. They've been told to figure it out themselves, which means what? You sleep on a park bench? Figure it out yourselves. Think about the fact, Darren, that we had Eric Sim writing for us a couple of years ago, and he's been a big advocate for the minors. And he would tell stories about how he decided to, in his shared house, he decided to take a closet and that would be his bedroom so he could pay half the amount of other guys, which, you know, is disgusting and pathetic, but also sort of clever. So kudos to him for being clever or calling dibs on the closet. But think about this. I mean, as you were talking, I thought, okay, these guys also know if you're fourth year senior, whatever, you also know that you're susceptible to this, right? And especially if you're like suddenly a sixth rounder, you're like, okay, hold on. Nobody's telling me that, you know, you're going to be suspicious of, you know, you don't think suddenly, oh, cool, I'm going to get $100,000. You know, none of this is Christmas morning. But the fact that it's, I mean, I don't remember what Sim's signing bonus was. I want to say it was like 20K or something. Think about the fact that now that it was 10 years ago, maybe or so, he got drafted. It's gotten, for so many of these guys, it's going backwards.
And you've got guys now. There was at least 40 rounds, too.
Yeah.
Like they were taking a lot more players in general.
Yeah, I'm guessing even those, okay, granted, not all those guys got signed and Larry King's grandson didn't get signed or whatever, but even a 38th rounder, I'm guessing there was still a minute. Maybe those guys, in not probably every case, got $1,000. I don't know, and we'd have to look at all those numbers, but I'm guessing in general, this system is getting, these guys are getting chiseled worse than ever. How are you going backwards from something that was so bad then? I mean.
Well, it's, so I am basically 25. And so,
hey, good.
So like when I, like when I'm thinking about this and I like, I'm thinking about like Andrew Dahlquist, who is 5 years younger than me. If I was 20, I'd just be like, oh, cool. $10,000 to play baseball. Obviously Andrew Dahlquist got a lot more money than that, but just, these are how old these guys are, like 20, 21, 22. Some of them are closer to my age, but they're all coming out of college where they weren't making really any money, or right. literally not allowed to make money right. until like a month ago. So it's just, it's a system that isn't set up for a lot of people to succeed. It's people talk about this with soccer a lot, or even journalism in general, where you kind of have the, gotta have the means. Because then you go into, you know, these internships or whatever, or for soccer, you're paying tens of thousands of dollars to play for these soccer clubs like the Chicago Fire or whatever. And it's just weird that it's all in sports, because we all say, oh, it's a kid's game. But like, that's some really great propaganda, because
there's a lot of suffering.
The people that are like not taking this, Gavin Sheets just hit a walk-off three on homer. Cool. But go Gavin.
Nice.
But so like, just bringing up Gavin, like he came from obviously Larry Sheets, so he didn't really have to worry about any right. of that stuff. He just worried about his game. A lot of these guys don't have those means, especially the guys, because we're not even bringing up the international signing guys who like are literally either talking to their parents or their guardian or whomever is in charge of them when they're 14, saying like, hey, when you get old enough, here's X amount of cash. Mm-hmm. Or like when you do the Tatis family, the White Sox are like, hey, well, X amount of cash for your two children. Mm-hmm. It's just an odd system for a multi-billion-dollar industry that's tax exempt. It's odd.
That is a very generous word, and I appreciate your diplomacy. Although I will have to point out, SB Nation, for those of you listening, SB Nation, Darren Black brought up journalism. Okay, I'm just saying, he brought up journalism. I didn't.
I mean, there's a bunch of that, but I just know that because of the Chicago Tribune buying out, that's just mm-hmm. kind of been on my mind recently as a Chicago resident. It's just there's a ton of these industries, like multi-billion-dollar industries, that don't really care about like making the product fine. Obviously, the White Sox and the 29 other teams care about their Major League Baseball product, but they only care in the extent that there are 3 to 7 guys in a draft class plus an international signing class that they really care about. And then again, everybody else, like when I say org pitchers or mm-hmm. org catchers, like those are two of the kind of things that are most important. They'll keep going from single A to triple A, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And that's great for them, but the club doesn't really care about them. They're yeah. like, they're sending them from single A to go against guys that pitched in the majors. Like, that's not caring about your development.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of examples of not really caring about the development.
The good news, Darren, is the have-nots boat is really big. It's growing. It's way more fun. But the problem, the downside, Darren, is the have-nots boat is called the have-nots boat. So ultimately, yeah. it's not really that fun. And guess what? We're all in it together. The guys were writing yeah. about us. Hey, you know, it's a big party. Yeah. Hi, Jerry. Hi, Rick.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony. Okay. Well, one thing I want to add, because we've been trying to give them a little bit of publicity, and it seems appropriate for the topic, the Twitter handle and group Adopt a Minor Leaguer does try to raise funds. This is pathetic that this even has to be happening. I believe right now they're doing something where it's like buy burritos for the Beloit Snappers or whatever. But, you know, they basically pick teams, try to help guys out, and, you know, hand them over like, burrito gift cards or whatever. And mm-hmm. believe it or not, as silly as it sounds, it makes a huge difference to these guys not having to scrape together money for one day or try to hope that Jared Kelly, the bonus baby, decides to pay for their dollar menu that night.
Yeah.
Because, these guys are, they're literally scraping by. Granted, they're choosing to play baseball for a profession, just like we're choosing to write about the White Sox for a profession. But, it's a good follow. And if you are lucky enough to be maybe in between the haves and the have-nots boats, you're like swimming from one to the other, swimming toward the haves, hey, maybe you want to throw a few bucks, go to their website and throw a few bucks at a minor leaguer, because it is going to make a big difference. And those guys are doing great work and having some great success. And as silly as it seems, it does make a big impact. Dan Victor, who we might be talking to tomorrow, I know he's done stuff like he brings like a tub of like sunflower seeds for the guys, or like beef jerky and stuff. And again, it seems silly, but it's like those guys are jacked to get that, because it's like, this helps. We don't otherwise maybe have all of this stuff.
Yeah,
this stuff helps. So
or there'll be like your mean Mercedes who goes to that where he was interviewing on Real Sports. And I mean, it's great that this organization or whatever was buying into his future, but then it's like, you got to send us a bunch of money if you do well.
Which
there's good and bad with that. I don't think he's going to be making the amount that those guys are hoping that he makes, but
Fernando Tatis Jr. did. Yes. And so they basically don't have to do anything with anybody ever again. Yes. And they're going to be all right. So no worries about them. They're going to be fine. They can pick losers for the rest of time. And I think they're going to be okay. But yeah, guys, it's tricky. It's ugly. And I certainly didn't mean necessarily for this topic to hijack our podcast otherwise, but it's important stuff, and it's coming out right on the heels of the draft. And we're starting to see some of the numbers, and we're not seeing inspiring numbers. We're seeing teams continue to try to game the system. And again, it's probably not even fair to say that they're gaming the system. There is no system. I mean, they have their guidelines and they're saying, well, no. And the White Sox can say, well, we pooled that money in so we could, get our second rounder out of his college commitment, so our organization can be stronger. How much can you argue with that? Except it shouldn't be one or the other. It should be everybody getting something. If the 20th rounder just gets 20 grand, okay, that's pretty nice. You know, you're not going to blow it on a cup. Maybe the White Sox are saying, you know what, or the Cubs. The Cubs are definitely saying, we don't want to teach these guys irresponsible habits. We don't want to give them money to blow. So if they don't have the money, they won't blow it. You know, this is just their financial education. And Lord knows the rickets should be giving people. This is a different podcast, Aaron, but maybe we'll have one like very soon. Maybe we'll just start recording another one right after we finish. All right. Thanks, Darren. Great stuff as always. Thanks for an update on sort of the system and your takes on things. And of course, your input for our sort of like bonus appendix topic, because it sort of flew up on our faces today. And we're seeing, and I really hope, I think we've seen maybe about 5 signings for the White Sox, and obviously the top couple guys, we sort of know their numbers. Yeah, that's not going to be a surprise. But there's like 5 or 7 sort of in the balance. I really hope we don't see something embarrassing like $1,000 signing bonus for our 11th rounder, because White Sox will hear about that from us. They don't care, but they will hear about it from us. When Rick Hahn decided to put his foot in the mouth with the social media comments, we gave him some guff for it. When they haven't spent the money, we give them guff for it. Yeah. Praise them when they're doing great. We're praising Gavin Sheets for being a hero tonight and earning a split against the dreaded, hated mini Twinkies. But we're also going to hold them to the fire when it's appropriate. So I hope the White Sox do right by the guys they've chosen to put their faith in. This is the future of the team. Put something into these guys. Darren Black, as a 25-year-old, gets right behind it. On the Have-Nots boat. It's a nice boat. There's some nice recliners. Yeah. There's great entertainment. Recliners. There's really, really good company. But unfortunately, it's also a little hot. There's not a lot of food to go around.
no water.
You get thrown on that coronavirus injured list like with a snap just when we sneeze. It's rough. It's rough. Well, okay. From the Have-Nots boat, I'm Brett Valentini talking with Darren Black. Thanks, Darren, once again. And hey, maybe we'll do it again in a week. Huh?
Yep, I'll be here.
All right. Maybe finally, one day, when you finally get to that Habs boat, you're going to get that Cannonballers cap. I know it's coming. Yeah. I know it's coming. I'm waiting because I need that team to do better.
As soon as they win their 20th game, I'll get it.
Okay, there's a trigger. Okay, well, they're 0-6.
I thought it was coming soon, but
it's just being held at the P.O. box.
Yeah, it's just two guys are doing well, and then everyone else is like, hey, let's lose.
Cannonballers, we're most connected to you. We love you, so we're trying to laugh with you. And hey, listen, they're I think their team's pretty good about it. They realize that, you know, their management is pretty good about it. They have some perspective about the fact that they're having some unprecedented weird streak. And, you know, again, I think somebody on our staff, it might've been Darren Black. I don't know. I think it was Darren, said they're going to be second half champs. So I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. It's going to be awesome. All right. Thanks everybody for listening, reading, sometimes even watching. We'll be doing this again probably in a week, and we'll probably have some podcasts between now and then for you to check out as well. Thanks always for reading and listening. We'll be back with you on the farm about a week's time.